Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Fans, welcome you into another edition of Inside Boxing Live. Dan Canobio, your host for the next 48 minutes of boxing talk, and joining us here on the program this week, David Benavidez and Dan Rafael. Of course, we're on the heels of Canelo Alvarez's historic win, another knockout, another belt. He defeats Caleb Plant in 11 rounds. He is now the first ever undisputed super middleweight champion, also the first Mexican fighter to be undisputed in any weight class. So we'll hear from David Benavidez, who I think is the growing consensus among fans as who we want to see next fight Canelo. And I think that Benavidez is saying all the right things. He's welcoming that shot, but he's not just going to sit around and wait for it to come. He's even willing to fight a Jermall Charlo in order to earn a shot at Canelo. So that was refreshing from Benavidez. We're also going to hear from Dan Rafael. We will build a case for and against the five opponents out there that I think that Canelo will choose from, whether it's Benavidez, whether it's Charlo, whether it's Triple G, Beterbiev, and Bivol. That's at 175 pounds. So it was a great last fight week. Thank you to everyone who consumed all the content that I put out, whether it was the post-fight podcast, whether it was the fastest 2 minutes in boxing, which was our most viewed ever. It was a whirlwind week, but the boxing beat goes on. There was no off-season in this. We got Jaime Munguia and Gabe Rosado this week. We got David Benavidez, as I said, headlining over on Showtime, and then we're right in the heart of it, right in the heart of this November to remember. Next weekend, Terrence Crawford and Sean Porter. But let's get to Dan Rafael. On the other side, you'll hear from David Benavidez. Dan Rafael is here. Fight Freaks Unite newsletter, World Boxing News, Ring Magazine, jack of all trades, writing on the sweet science, and he's back from Vegas. He's in the Commonwealth. He's returned home after a Canelo fight week that I'm exhausted from. I had a major adrenaline dump Sunday and yesterday, but I'm ready to go. I'm ready to continue to talk about Canelo, preview some fights coming up this weekend. We'll get into it all. Dan, the experience in Vegas, I'm jealous I wasn't there. How was it?
It was terrific. I mean, it was as good of a fight week as I've had. And, it's special when he fights, and people were very excited. It was great to have crowds back. I have been to a few fights in Las Vegas since the pandemic has started. It was the first one where they allowed fans at the weigh-in. So we were back to special weigh-ins where they don't open up the entire arena like they've done for some of the biggest fights, but they had about almost 5,000 people in the MGM Grand Garden Arena for the weigh-in. So that was a beautiful thing to have all those fans there once again, which was a lot different. I mean, Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder 3 obviously was a big fight. Mm-hmm. What was seemingly now the final fight in the career of Manny Pacquiao when he fought Ordenis Ugas, another fight that I was at in Las Vegas. Again, no fans at the weigh-in for that fight or for the heavyweight fight. So to have the fans back in that atmosphere was terrific. So that brings a lot of excitement and energy to the fight week. And it just wouldn't have been the same if they weren't there, particularly given, the pre-fight sort of animosity between Plant and Canelo. The crowd was certainly egging Caleb Plant on, when they were booing him and doing all those kinds of things. So it was really, the whole fight week was terrific. And I also looked at it like this. A long time ago, I was told by one of my mentors, you may know him from when you were a kid, the great Michael Katz, longtime boxing writer from the New York Times and later the Daily News. And then
not to be confused with Ron Katz.
Not to be confused with Ron Katz. Right. Ron Katz, a better matchmaker, Michael Katz, better writer.
I would agree. Anyway,
when I was a young reporter, one of my first couple of fights in Atlantic City, when I was ready for USA Today, Michael sort of took me under his wing a little bit. He's like, come on, kid, I'm going to take you to lunch. I'm going to teach you how to do this job. One of the things he told me at that lunch, I always remember this, it's been like 20, 21 years since then, is that he said, there's great fights and there's great writing fights. And you hope when it's over, you've had both. But in the case of Canelo Alvarez against Caleb Plant, no doubt about it, was a great writing fight. It turned out to be maybe not a great fight, but a very good fight. But from a writing point of view, there were so many things to write about, so much material in the main event for both sides, you know, some decent things on the undercard to write about. So from that perspective, the fight week was excellent because there was so much material to work with that it just made it that much better than your average big fight.
That's perfect segue into what I wanted to talk about too, is that I was thinking about it, you know, a couple of days removed from the fight. Canelo is really giving fight fans everything they can possibly want and need. I know sometimes the praise is over the top, but if you take a look at the check marks that he's on a list of, if you're a fight fan, you want, you know, he's giving you trash talk. He is giving you historic fights. He's making history. Fans want to see that. And on top of it, he's knocking guys out. Floyd was undoubtedly the last superstar in boxing. He's now retired. And his fights were also big events, but let's be honest, there were times when some fight fans felt buyer's remorse. There were times when, just because Floyd is so damn good, you know, at the end of his fight, it's like, oh man, I just watched him, you know, box the ears off of another guy for $80. You know, Canelo is also boxing very well, and he's also putting exclamation points on the end of these fights with knockouts. So from top to bottom, what more can you ask for? He's giving you, even at press conference, he's giving you fisticuffs there with this. He's trash talking. He's, you know, the biggest box office guy, biggest pay-per-view guy, and he is winning fights in emphatic fashion with another knockout. So, I mean, he's literally, even the hardest, you know, the most ardent hater of Canelo, I mean, it's really can't really find too many things to criticize him for.
Absolutely not. And the fact of the matter is, the fact that he's now speaking in English more frequently, both in terms of his interviews, as well as when he does things at post-fight press conferences, pre-fight press conferences, and various capacities, you know, also speaking in Spanish also, it makes him that much more accessible. You know, my own interactions with Canelo, you know, when we've spoken privately, not necessarily in an interview fashion, he has for a number of years spoken to me in English, at least a little bit, not necessarily for an interview. Mm-hmm. So one time when he tried to speak to me in English in an interview, this goes back a few years ago when he originally signed that big mega contract with DAZN, they finalized the paperwork. It was like 2-3 o'clock in the morning. And I was on the phone with him writing a story. At the time I was working for ESPN and writing about that. And he did most of that interview in English, but when they put him on the phone with me, I actually didn't even realize it was him at first because he was speaking in English.
That's funny.
But now the interview that I did with him, I had him on a Zoom call about maybe 10 days before the fight, a one-on-one. It was the first time, and I've interviewed Canelo countless times. I've covered his entire career in terms of since he's fought in the United States. And it was the first time that he conducted an interview with me virtually entirely in English. There was maybe question where he got maybe a slightly tripped up and wasn't sure what how to answer it, and sought a little help from his publicist, who does a great job, Jane.
Yeah, Jane, she's awesome. She does a great job.
She does do a great job. And so she translated the one response. But other than that, our interview was entirely in English. When he spoke to us in a small scrum after the final news conference on Wednesday, he did it in English. He also is able to, you know, obviously move very smoothly into Spanish if there was some Spanish language reporters there that were also asking him some questions. So the fact that he can do that and, like you said, deliver us exciting fights, good knockouts, taking on other champions, the best opposition out there. He put himself in a position with the way he handles his business where he is free to go make whatever fights he can envision himself wanting to have because of the fact that he's doing these short-term deals. He does a one-fight deal with Hearn for the Callum Smith fight. He comes back, he does a two-fight deal with Hearn, turns out to be the mandatory, followed by Billy Joe Saunders, does a one-fight deal to get the undisputed fight against Caleb Plant. Now he's a free agent, both promotionally as well as his television rights, once again. And so now it's up to him and his team to decide what they want. He said at the post-fight press conference, because it was 4 fights in 11 months, which is unheard of at this level in this day and age, that he's going to take a little bit of time off. He'll be back in May. Mm-hmm. So probably sometime in January, he said he and his team will sit down and start to formulate what they want to do. Right now, he's going to go on vacation. He told me he's going to take his wife to Paris. but when he gets time to sit down and really figure out what he wants to do, he doesn't have to limit himself to this promotion company, that television network. He can seek out whatever he wants, whether it's to stay with PBC and Showtime. I guess Fox would be a possibility if that was something that was interesting to him, if they were interested in having him on there platform. Certainly he could try to talk to the folks at DAZN and Eddie Hearnigan, who was there at the fight, who still would love to work with Canelo. And, you know, even in the pre-fight, he brought up Top Rank to me. He has a good relationship, as does Eddie Reynoso with Bob Arum and team over there. They allowed him all week to use the Top Rank gym in Las Vegas, which they were very appreciative,
And of course they did.
Well, of course, but they've got horses to offer him also. They have Bob in the light heavyweight division. If he decides to do that, they are the promoter of Arthur Beterbiev. They have been involved for the last several fights as a co-promoter of Joe Smith. You know, Eddie Hearn has Dmitry Bivol, who has the WBA title at light heavyweight. And of course, at the PBC, a group of guys that he could stick with, they could possibly offer him David Benavidez, a former two-time champion in that weight class who fights at her. And we're going to talk about that fight. And they also have Charlo, who was dying to go up from middleweight to super middleweight for that caliber of a fight. And, you know, and again, they've got Anthony Durrell, who looked very spectacular with his knockout on the undercard. Point is, he can fight whoever he wants, and he doesn't have to worry what side of the street they're on.
But one other item, too, you brought up the fighting till May. One thing that came out today is from the Las Vegas or the Nevada Commission, a orbital bone fracture of Caleb Plant. Have you heard anything about that? There was a picture going around where that eye looks a lot like Billy Joe's eye.
It doesn't surprise me because I could see the swelling and the puffiness afterwards. You know, after the knockout, they did send him to the hospital to get examined. I had not heard in the immediate aftermath of that, if that was the situation. It doesn't surprise me, though. I thought, you know, Caleb fought a good fight, showed a lot of heart, but that was a very harsh knockout. So I can't say I'm surprised by that diagnosis. I didn't see the x-rays or whatever, but just on the eye test, no pun intended, it didn't look as bad as the way Billy Joe's, that area of his face looked like.
I think Saunders was like catastrophic.
That was bad. I just hope that, you know, if it is fractured, that it's not serious and that Caleb will take the requisite time off, get it healed up and get back in the gym. It's not like it's a career ending kind of injury.
Right.
Caleb Plant has absolutely nothing to be ashamed of. He turned in a tremendous performance. He won some rounds, showed a lot of heart, proved that he, at the very least, belongs in that caliber of a fight. You know, and it's like I said to you and others ahead of this fight, Dan, and it's that picking Canelo to win the fight was not in any way a knock on Caleb Plant, the same way it was no knock on Billy Joe Saunders or Callum Smith. It's just that those three guys and others in the weight class are at a certain level. And they're all good world-class fighters. They've had titles, and they're very good at what they do. But Canelo Alvarez is a historical figure in this sport, and it's time that people start to understand that. He is here, and those guys are here. It's just that he's just a better fighter than them. He's been taking care of business in spectacular fashion against all kinds of variety of opponents, different styles, and obviously over the years in different weights. He's an all-time great fighter. People just – and I've said this before. People sometimes they lose sight of that. They don't get it while it's happening. I'm telling you, get used to it while it's happening. Don't realize it, you know, 5 years from now, like, oh my goodness, he was in his prime. This is it right now, folks.
We're in it. We're in it right now.
Right now. Yeah. This is him at his best.
Yeah. Let's go through it, Dan. Let's go through, because we want to know what's next. It's got to the point where it's almost like when Mayweather was untouchable. It's like, who out there can solve this riddle? Who can dethrone Mayweather? And ultimately, no one was able to. Obviously, Canelo has a few blemishes on the career, too. Draws and one loss to Mayweather that fans love to bring up on Twitter every time that Canelo fights.
Time out. When did you have to be undefeated? Boxers lose fights. Yep. The greatest fighters of all time lost fights. I don't care if you're talking about Ray Robinson or Muhammad Ali or anybody out there, Sugar Ray Leonard, pick a guy.
Even Oscar. Pacquiao.
I mean, other than Floyd, he's a great fighter. He did not lose a fight. Fair enough. You know, Rocky Marciano didn't lose a fight. But, I mean, the point is 99% of every single guy in the Boxing Hall of Fame has lost a couple of fights. It's not a career ender, and it's not a big deal. Who cares?
I know. And
Canelo lost a fight to Floyd Mayweather, who was the all-time great. He went the route, lost the decision, and he has a draw from, you know, way earlier in his career when he was, like, probably, 17, 18 years old?
Right, and Golovkin.
And Golovkin, of course. But Golovkin, again, is another all-time great Hall of Fame, you know, future Hall of Fame guy.
We might be seeing a third one. I want to talk to you about the options. What's next for Canelo? Let's play a little game where we make a case for and we make a case against some of the options that are out there right now. And we'll start with David Benavidez. He's on this episode as well. interviewed him, and it was actually refreshing, some of the things he was saying. He was saying, listen, I'm 24 years old. If Canelo doesn't want to choose me, I'm going to be around for a number of years, and I have no problem fighting or welcoming Jermall Charlo to 168, and we have to maybe earn the right to fight. A novel concept, earning the right, generating more public interest, getting better as a fighter to take on Canelo and not just showing up for a paycheck. But if you take a look at Benavidez, this guy throws the most punches per round, lands the most punches per round, throws the most jabs per round, lands the most power shots, and his defense is getting better. To me, under the PBC banner at 168 pounds, a former two-time world champion, a guy that is very marketable, has a big fan base as a Mexican-American fighter, this is a no-brainer for me. I think Benavidez is the guy that should be next.
I agree with that. I appreciate David's point of view that why shouldn't he fight Charlo to earn it? But and that's a great concept, obviously. I do live in the real world, and I understand they're not going to sacrifice one of those guys as a potential Canelo opponent while they're undefeated. Mm-hmm. That they're probably going to have, if they do stay working with Canelo, they would probably go and do either Benavidez next or Charlo next, and then after that, the other guy. So they're not going to have them fight each other, because that would leave Canelo without a PBC top tier opponent. And meanwhile, they'd be bumping each other off. So I agree. If I can wave the magic wand and have my choice, I would hope to see everybody in Las Vegas on Cinco de Mayo for the great Mexican Canelo Alvarez against the very exciting, young, undefeated Mexican-American David Benavidez, who of course has to first win his fight on Saturday against Kyron Davis, which he is obviously a significant favorite. And I think he will win that fight. So I think that would be the best of the possibilities if he's deciding to stick with PBC. If they decide to go the Charlo route next in May, no problem there either. Let Charlo come up to 168, which I know he's willing and interested to do. He's also an undefeated fighter, a world champion. He'll talk a lot of smack also. That's a very good matchup. It's not like he's, the middleweights coming up are not like they're not much smaller than Canelo. Canelo Alvarez spent, probably at this point, the most of his career or some of his biggest fights in his career have been in the middleweight division. So that's not a big deal. But those are the two guys. I mean, and frankly, I'd like to see Benavidez next. If you told me it's Charlo, then Benavidez, or it's Benavidez, Charlo, either way is fine with me.
You know what it reminds me of? When Pacquiao went to the PBC, and obviously it's like, let's see him fight Spence. Let's see him fight Thurman. Let's see him fight, give me another name from the PBC. Let's see him fight.
Broner, Ugas.
Right, Broner was the guy. It wasn't the fight we necessarily wanted to see or thought was going to be the most competitive, but it was the most marketable, and it's like, all right, let's keep Canelo in our realm. Let's keep Pacquiao happy inside of this PBC family. Obviously, Pacquiao had more of a solid deal with PBC, maybe a three-fight deal, but I wouldn't be shocked also if it was Charlo first. And let's talk about Charlo a little bit. And I have a case against Charlo, not as a strong case I had for Benavidez. Take a look at it. You brought up his size. Yes, he is. Canelo's only 5'9". Charlo 6 foot, at least listed on BoxRec. One fight in his last 13 months, one knockout in his last 6 fights, and it came over Dennis Hogan, who was coming up from 154. Zero fights at 168, coming off of his best performance against Derevchenko. I thought by far he looked great, mixing in power, boxing, defense, by far his best performance, followed it up with arguably his worst performance, considering the stakes of the fight with Montiel in June. I understand that meritocracy doesn't exactly exist in boxing, but that is the case. That is the case that I can make against Charlo, and the case for it is the marketability. He's one of the faces of PBC. Majority of fight fans know who the guy is. They can make the fight. If they want to veer away from Vegas, which I don't think they would, you can make that fight in the Houston or Texas area, and it would be a bonanza. So that's my case for and against. Do you agree?
Well, I think that, number one, I think they'll probably stick in Vegas just for the mere fact that they can probably bring in more ticket money, unless they decided to go to, like, maybe go back to Cowboy Stadium. But even there, it's tough to get to the financial level that they can get for a big Vegas fight. I believe the fight at the MGM Grand Garden Arena that was this past Saturday between Canelo and Plant, the gate figure's not done yet, but from what everybody that was involved at PBC and Showtime was saying to me, the gate was probably going to be in that $15-17 million neighborhood. You just can't get that much out of the big stadium fight, even though, like, for Billy Joe Saunders, they had like 74,000 people there, but the dollar figure was much less. So, if they're looking to maximize the money from that standpoint, they'd probably stick in Vegas. Charlo is interesting. I agree with all the things you said. Here's the difference. Charlo will play the villain, and he'll love playing the villain. And you can't underestimate that element of the storyline, which is, you know, the clear good guy slash bad guy. Not that Charlo's a bad guy, but that he has no problem playing that role to the hilt. Benavidez is hard to, like, I don't see him as a bad guy. It's almost like, you know,
such a good, he's a lovable guy, and he says all the right things, Benavidez.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, if you're familiar, if you watch wrestling, it's the baby face versus the baby face, you know, but you need the baby face.
Damn good fight though.
Oh, it's a hell of a fight. I mean, obviously I think both fights for different reasons are entertaining for fans. I have no problem. Look, when we talk about, I think you would agree with this. When we talk about the against version of why you shouldn't happen or why you're for this fight to happen, you know, making those cases, we're really kind of splitting hairs. I think anybody would be happy with him fighting either of those guys, particularly when, you know, if he fights one, there's a very good chance that if he's successful, he winds up fighting the other guy at some point too.
Well, let's get to a fight, Dan. Let's get to a fight that kind of has a very short shelf life because of the opponent's age, of course. It's Triple G. It's Gennady Golovkin. It would be the third fight. I think that if Wilder and Fury has taught us anything, that maybe a third fight that not a lot of fans want to see can end up being the best one of them all, and that's going to be very hard to top considering the two's 24 rounds that they have already given us. He's Triple G's 40 years old. He's fighting coming up here in December against Murata, a fight that he should win. But we have to keep in mind that Golovkin is 40 years old. We've seen a precipitous drop in his defense, most notably. Power is still above average. Do you want to see Golovkin next? Did you hear any rumblings about Golovkin being next? I'm sure that Eddie Hearn would love Golovkin being next. I think it's a polarizing topic right now because this is the one where you can't really wait. You know, he's 40 years old, and I think it's now or never.
I agree with that aspect of it for sure. The funny thing is, it's the first Canelo fight that I've covered in a long time, and I've covered pretty much everything for a long time, where I don't know if I even heard Triple G's name mentioned very much at all in any of the questions at the interviews or him bringing it up or, you know, in any even fans, you know, asking about things on social media and this and that. I don't think there's a great movement for it. I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think Canelo was interested in giving him another chance. He fought him 24 rounds. He believes he won the second fight clean, even though many people, myself included, at ringside that night had it a draw. But the bottom line is, and this is something that Mike Tyson said to me many years ago, the most disrespectful thing you can do as a boxer is not give the other guy the payday. And I don't think Canelo Alvarez has any interest in giving Triple G the payday because he can make maybe not as much money to fight Golovkin as he can to fight some other guys. But I think that he'd rather twist the knife, if you know what I mean, and not give him the payday and take on other guys.
That's a good point. That's a good point because, you know, I think that this would be the case for this fight if you're Canelo. It's clear. I mean, it's the money. Hearn can go to Canelo and say, listen, this is what you can make fighting the other options out there, and this is what you can make fighting Golovkin, and I'm sure the Golovkin envelope is going to be a little bit fatter. But does Canelo really care at this point?
I mean, they always want the money, but I don't think it's that much different that it's going to make him change his mind. But here's the other thing about that is that, you know, he just doesn't have the desire to fight the guy again. And it's not like he's ducking him. I think anybody at this stage of the game would make Canelo Alvarez a definitive favorite against the Triple G that we have seen over the last, you know, couple of years, where he has fought very sporadically and frankly not looked that good even in victories. Although I have to say, I did my own research on the issue, if you will. I posted a poll on Twitter and I said, who would you like to see Triple G fight next? And I don't know, it was like I put it up for like 14 hours or something like that, and my choices were Charlo, Benavidez, Triple G, and who was the fourth one I put up there?
It was
Better BF. So of those four opponents, I was actually rather surprised how tightly packed they were. Triple G ended up winning that poll. I believe he got something, it was at about 13,000 votes.
Well, that's,
and he had 29%. And then second was Benavidez. That was a couple of points less than that. Charlo was maybe a point or less than that. And Better Biev was fourth with about 15%.
Well, it's most, but fans, the Charlo, know, most fans know Triple G. I mean, you have a lot of followers, Dan. So the casual fan is going to click Triple G. I mean, it has the
but
most
that's the reason
appeal.
Why it's so. But that's why I was so surprised, because Golovkin is so much more well-known. The fact that Benavidez that's and good. Charlo, not nearly as well-known, were not even 3 or 4 points behind him, that said to me that he can go any route and still make a big fight and provide interesting fights to those fans. I think that it shows you the breadth of opponents that he has. And by the way, Twitter only lets you put four choices. Mm-hmm. I didn't include Joe Smith. I didn't include Anthony Durrell. I didn't include Dimitri Bivol. I mean, other names that pop up.
Yeah. Let's get into those other names. So those are the three that I think would be the, you know, if you had to put odds on it, it would be Triple G, Charlo, or Benavidez. Of course, there's that jump up to 175, and fans are just clamoring for this to see Canelo make more history. Obviously, it's better BF and it's Bivol. And I put out a tweet this past weekend, and I think, honestly, that Bivol might be a tougher fight than Beterbiev because he can move. He has enough power to keep Canelo honest. And obviously, Beterbiev is a devastating puncher. But those are the two guys at 175. It's Beterbiev and it's Bivol.
Well, if I'm Team Canelo and I'm interested in doing either of those fights, 100% I'm going for Beterbiev. Bivol is a very good fighter who has said he'll even come down to 168. I don't see Canelo being interested in that because it doesn't bring him anything new. He can't win a title. All he can do is defend. So he would probably, if he was going to fight him at 175. Mm-hmm. Problem with Bivol is, who's an excellent fighter, he just doesn't have any kind of fan following.
None.
He has a style that's not bad, but not great. He's kind of like leaves you wanting more, I think, a lot of times when he fights. He doesn't have a big personality. In other words, there's nothing wrong with him as an opponent. It just, he doesn't really bring that much spice to an event. And he's not the quote unquote real champion of the division.
Well, that's a good point.
So at least when Canelo went up to 175 and he fought Kovalev, he had a belt, even if he wasn't the real champ, but he was by far the biggest name mm-hmm. and had fought all the top guys and he scored a spectacular knockout. So that was interesting to him. So now you look at it like this, like all the things I just said about Dimitri Bivol, who I'm a fan of, but I also understand the overall picture of how this works. And now you have Beterbiev, who's considered the real champ, has two belts and is a devastating puncher, but fairly straightforward kind of fighter, not going to do anything crazy, fancy, tricky. Hasn't looked great maybe in his last couple of fights, is a little bit inactive. You know, he's been on the floor before against regular fighters like Callum Johnson, who had him in real trouble when they had their fight a couple of years ago. He has to get through Marcus Brown in a fight that's coming up in a few weeks. But if he was going to go to light heavyweight, I would hope that he would look at the fight against the Beterbiev. That's a very exciting fight. He'll be considered the boogeyman, bigger guy, strong, murderous puncher. Two titles at stake. I think that would interest Canelo Alvarez. But all that said, if I'm a betting man, which I'm not, but if I was going to bet, he's staying with PBC and he's fighting either Charlo or Benavides.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be Charlo for some weird reason. I think it's going to be Charlo.
I agree.
And then Benavides. You know, give him the easier of the two options. Build up better Benavides. See how he looks this weekend over on Showtime. That's the great part about this all too, is that we're going to see all these guys besides Charlo and Bivol. Bivol, one fight since 2019. You know, don't really know much about it. Wouldn't offer like the monetary. It wouldn't be there. The upside for Canelo, and if he beats Beterbiev, you're right. That's like the guy. Every division is four champions for every division, as we know. But we can go and identify.
No. In the super middleweight division, there's only one champion.
Oh, of course. But you know what?
And
I mean,
in the junior welterweight division, there's only one champion.
There's been three undisputed fights this year. It's been a great year. But you know what I mean? Now you can go through every weight class and identify the champion. Brian Kenny loves to do this. The champion. And then 175, it's Beterbiev. So if he can go up there, beat him, that's it. But I think it's going to be Charlo, and I think it's going to be Benavides. But my point being is we'll be able to see how Benavides looks this weekend. We're going to see how Triple G looks against Barada. We're going to see how Beterbiev looks against Marcus Brown. Wish Charlo would fight.
I'll throw one other one in there. I mean, I know we're not talking about that specifically, but again, from an entertainment point of view, give me Joe Smith against Canelo Alvarez before you give me Bivol. That's a fun fight.
Yeah, hardworking Joe. Joe, my guy from Long Island, climbs up trees. He is, battling a very severe case of COVID, but he's supposed to come back. Him and Beterbiev was supposed to be the can't-miss action fight at 175. And, what happened with Danny Jacobs trying to get into the fold to fight. They'll try to pick off Joe Smith. All these fighters look at Joe Smith and think that he, I can come up there and win a title. for my legacy. I know Danny Jacobs is looking to do that, but that, man, Joe Smith hits hard. I mean, he definitely hits. He might not have the, you know, the acumen of some of these guys, the amateur experience, but Joe Smith hits like a ton of bricks. All these are good opponents. This is a good time for boxing. Like I said, there's been 3 undisputed fights this year. There's been 8 unification bouts this year. We still have all of November, all of December. Boxing is in a very good spot right now. Dan Rayfield, I always love when you come on the show. We trade, we go back and forth. It's always a good time. So good verbal sparring, Dan. I appreciate it, and we'll see you soon.
Appreciate it, Dan. And we usually agree on everything most of the time. In varying degrees.
Yes, it's good back and forth. It's good for the fan. We don't always have to disagree just to disagree. We can always give fans exactly what they want, and that's a good fight for Canelo Alvarez and good fights in total. Thanks a lot, Dan.
All right, you bet. Appreciate it.
We have David Benavidez here with us right now, former 2-time WBC super middleweight champion. He fights this Saturday on Showtime. Khyrone Davis is the opponent. Now, David, this is now another camp where things didn't exactly go as planned, something out of your control, another extended camp. How hard is it for you to, or have you gotten used to it at this point, like dealing with this new normal that we're in with extended camps?
You know, it is what it is, bro. At the end of the day, sometimes you just gotta go through stuff like this. I mean, I've been boxing for a long time. I've been professional for a long time. This is my 8th year professional. So, I mean, stuff happens here every now and then. So, I mean, this time it kind of happened back to back, you know, with me getting COVID and then with Dusko Teki coming out positive for steroids. Yeah. But the good thing is that we're still fighting, you know, the fans, you know, the date is not pushed back again, and we're able to schedule the fight on the same day that it was already scheduled. So, I mean, we're able to salvage it, you know, after Dusko Teki came dirty, but everything is good, man. Everything remains the same. You know, camp is already done. You know, I worked extremely hard for this fight, and I'm just ready to perform on Saturday.
David, you talk about being a pro for 8 years, you know, and I was looking up, first of all, that's insane to me that you've been a pro for 8 years, and you've packed a lot into those 8 years, you know, reaching the pinnacle twice, becoming a world champion, stuff outside of the ring that kind of put your career on pause, and now getting back into the flow. All the things that I just brought up, does that make you not only a better fighter, but like a better man?
Yeah, I believe it does. I believe that, you know, the best teacher in life is experience, and everything I've been through has led me to this moment right here. I mean, the good thing is that I've had my little mishaps outside the ring, but inside the ring, I remain the same person with the same dedication that I've had since I was 3 years old. You know, I work extremely hard my whole life, and the love I have for boxing is just a passion on a whole different level, and I don't think anything's ever going to get in the way in that. And that's why I work so hard, man, and I always perform how I'm supposed to perform, because when it comes to work, the time that comes to work, I don't play around. You know, I put 110% into all my training camps. And yeah, man.
Were you shocked to hear that from Dusko Teki? I mean, he wasn't just on diuretic or this, that, and he was on like Jarrell Big Baby levels of juice.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of makes feel good about myself that these dudes are that scared of me that they're willing to go to that level of that extent of taking EPLs when he knew we got tested by VADA. We got tested 3 times prior. I mean, 3 times before leading up to that. So, I mean, he tried to really be really sneaky, but I don't think it would even made a difference. I think I would have still knocked him out anyways. I just think I'm on a whole different level. You know, if he wouldn't have got caught, it probably would have been a better fight because he would have needed that little extra push from the EPOs, but I would have still beat him.
Yeah, Khyrone Davis steps in, I think could potentially be a better fight. You know, a guy that fought to a draw with Durrell. Durrell looked pretty good this past weekend. But as you know, with us at CompuBox, we crunch the data. We look at your punch stats. And this is incredible, man. I don't know if you even know this, but you lead all super middleweights in punches thrown per round, 69. Nice. You lead all with punches landed per round, 25. Power landed and thrown, jabs landed and thrown. So you're pretty much the consensus leader when it comes to 168 in just offense. I mean, that is impressive.
Yeah. And I know that, man. And if I was looking at my last 4 fights, we really, you know, became more accurate these past couple years. And the my last three fights have landed at over 50%, a little bit under or right, either right at 50 or 49. Yeah, and I'm a power puncher. You know what I mean? I think people really don't understand that, and people don't realize that. That's why I'm so effective in the ring, because I'm not just throwing just to throw. You know, I know exactly what I'm doing. I know exactly how to set it up too. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing this for a long, long time, man. And this is just the way I love to fight. You know, you set up with the jab, throw combinations upstairs, and you go down to the body. You know, it's the same recipe has worked for every fight I've been in. So we're going to continue doing the same thing to everybody else.
It's impressive, really impressive. And what's even more impressive to me is over your last eight fights, your defense has improved big time. You know, you're down, opponents are only hitting you 23% of the time. That's a stark difference to the previous five before that. You make a big, big time improvements defensively. Is that something that you've been working on a lot?
Yeah, I've definitely been working on defense a lot, because, you know, this level I'm at right now is a whole different level than what I was 4 years ago. You know, dudes are hitting harder. They have way more experience, and all of them are older than me. So they all kind of have that man strength over me. Not in the sense meaning that they're more powerful than me, but they're already at their peak of their power. Yeah. I still haven't reached my peak of my power yet. So, you know, I can't just be all offense. I have to be all defense, but it does make me feel good. You know, just, you know, cause I know I'm good at defense, and I know how good my offense is, but a lot of people, I feel like they down talk my defense. Everybody thinks I just go in there and get hit all these shots, but I really don't. I mean, if you look at my fights, I'm not really beat up after. I don't really have marks on my face, but I mean, that's fine. As long as people think I don't have defense, you know, by the time I get in there, they're going to know it's a completely different story by the time it's too late.
Yeah, it's the one thing where, you know, obviously the big discussion now is Canelo Alvarez. And I would say there's a consensus growing that from the fans that they want to see you fight him next. And I'll read some detractors say, oh, man, Benavidez, he gets hit too much. You know, he's just going to be standing there in front of Canelo. But if you take a look at the numbers, you can't deny that over the last eight fights, there's been a steady improvement. So let's get to the big question. You're going to be asked about this all week. I think you're in a really good spot fighting after Canelo. Like I said, I think there's a growing consensus that you should be the next guy for him. What did you make of the fight? Let's start with Plant. What did you make of Plant's performance?
I thought it was a good performance, you know, honestly, to be honest with you. He did a little bit better than I thought he was going to do. But like I said, time and time again, the people that are going to have a better chance with Canelo are the ones that stay in front of him, earn his respect, and are willing to stand their ground. You have to have power to back Canelo up, you know, and that's what Caleb Plant doesn't have. I mean, he had all the other tools, but the power is just something he doesn't have. So that's why you've seen Canelo walking him down, you know, staying pressing to the body, staying pressing to the, you know, to the big haymakers, you know, because he didn't respect Caleb Plant's power. But I think what did Caleb Plant good and what was in his favor is his counter shots. He was doing some pretty good counter shots. He needed to catch Canelo here and there. But like I said, overall performance, it was a great fight. I enjoyed it. You know, I was really excited watching both the fighters, you know, have a good fight, because at the end of the day, I'm a fan of boxing, you know. Everything aside, you know, I put my differences aside from everybody. I'm a fan of boxing at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. But Canelo, too, man, he's a great fighter. Like I said, he's a shark in those late rounds, and he knows exactly how to work. But, like, what it is to me and him, I feel like that's the fight that everybody wants to see for a reason. You know, I thought we kind of do the same thing, me and Canelo. We, you know, start with combinations, and we go down the body. You know, the only differences between me and everybody else is fought. That I'm probably the hardest hitting fighter that he's fought, that he's probably going to potentially fight since Golovkin. You know, and I used to work with Golovkin too, you know, so I know firsthand I could give as much power as Golovkin, you know, because I was having some great sparring sessions with Golovkin. So that's why I feel like a lot of people are excited for that fight, because first of all, there's nobody else for Canelo to fight. And second of all, I think they just want to see, the fans want to believe that there's somebody to beat Canelo. You know, there's always going to be that dancing partner that great fighter always needs. And I believe I'm it.
Yeah, I mean, you just kind of made your own case that I've been saying for a while, is you need power and you need volume to disrupt Canelo. And as I just said, throwing 70 punches around, landing 25. And for the eye test, we can see the type of power you have, the defense. I mean, not only that, you're a former two-time champion. I mean, if you take a look at some of the other options at 168, if he wants to stay there, you know, Charlo hasn't even fought at 168. He just cleared out the entire division. So there isn't any other champion that he can fight. I'm confused as to why, if there's no anyone out there that wouldn't want to see you and him in the ring.
Yeah, and exactly. That's why, like, I've been saying with Charlo too, like, if he wants to get that fight in, like, why not fight me? You know, the WBC has been very comfortable giving interim titles out in the past. Why not make me and Charlo an interim title fight? And then we both get the winner gets Canelo. I mean, wow. It only makes sense to me. I don't think it makes sense that Charlo comes up, skips everybody in the line and fights Canelo. You know what I mean? It just doesn't make sense to me. But I mean, I guess that's how it works sometimes. But like for me, I don't mind fighting him now, later, 2 years. You know, I'm gonna be extremely ready. I turn 25 next month. My birthday is in December 17th. So I got 8 years professional. I think I got another 10 years left to me, so I'm not going nowhere.
Yeah, that's funny with Charlo, the fact that he hasn't ever fought at 168. And we're getting to the point now where there isn't really like a mandatory. So Canelo's going to potentially, or he is, he's going to choose who he wants to fight next. And let's just say that he does choose to go the 175 route, or he fights someone else other than you or Charlo. You pretty much said that you're comfortable fighting Charlo to potentially earn a spot at Canelo, which seems like no other fighters really want to do. They're waiting for that lottery ticket to be called. They're waiting for their name to be called. You're saying that you're willing to step in there with Charlo to get a shot at Canelo.
Yeah, definitely. But before I even talk about that. So you said there's no mandatory. I was originally supposed to be the mandatory. Yeah. My last fight was the WBC title eliminator. Mm-hmm. And this fight was going to be the WBC plus IBF title eliminator, but it's not a title eliminator no more. So, I mean, I should have been the next one fighting Canelo, but like I said, things happen. And then also too, the reason why I wanted to fight Charlo, and not even talking about Canelo, Canelo's not even a mix, you know, it was between me and Charlo. You know, we had a little back and forth going my last fight. Social media, all that, you know, like little trash talking between both teams and stuff. So, I mean, I feel like, too, I don't want to be that guy that's just waiting for Canelo. You know what I mean? I kind of want to carve my own path. And if a fight with Canelo is not available, then a fight with Canelo is not available. I didn't, you know, start boxing when I was a little kid just to say, oh, I want to fight Canelo when I get older, you know? Yeah, my job has always been being world champion, you know, carve my own way and be my own fighter. You know, if I get a chance with Canelo, then it happens. If I don't, then I don't. I mean, I'm not going to just not fight any other great fighter just because I'm trying to cash a paycheck in or something like that. You know, my job is to be the best boxer I could be and fight the best available opposition. There's a fight. I mean, I get criticized a lot because a lot of people say that I don't fight the best fighters, the top level fighter. I'm trying to fight. It's not my fault. You know, it's just that nobody wants to fight me. You know, I feel like what these fighters now, they're a little bit too spoiled now. They want too much money to, you know, take big risk. Everybody wants the big money, but nobody wants to take the risk unless it's with Canelo. You know what I mean? But I feel like if you want the bigger prize, you gotta take on a bigger threat and you gotta earn that opportunity. So that's what I'm trying to do. If it's not Canelo that's in there, you know, we could get Charlo, we could get Berlanga, we could get anybody. You know, I'm willing to fight. I'm a fighter at the end of the day, so I'm willing to fight whoever there is to fight.
That's great. That's music to fans' ears. That's just very refreshing to hear because we're seeing this. It's not good for the sport. It's not good for fighters' development. Listen, I can't fault Plant for what he did. He fought in February. He had something that Canelo wanted. That's an IBF belt. That belt represented $10 million for Plant. But man, it showed in the ring. The pedigree, it just showed the difference in skill. The fact that Plant, you know, his previous three fights were not against a murderer's row. And you saw it in the ring where he just wasn't on the same stress. But I believe iron sharpens iron, and it seems like you believe the same thing. It's like if you fought a Charlo, yes, he's a good fighter, and even though he hasn't fought at 168, not only would you increase, it's a big payday for you, and it increases your standing to fight Canelo, but it makes you a better fighter, and that's important. That's what you need to beat Canelo.
Yeah, that's exactly my point, and I feel like the better fighters I get into, or I get fights with, and the more experience I get, that's going to give me a bigger chance to beat Canelo. You know, I feel like that's what a lot of people don't understand. I mean, you're not just going to beat Canelo. I mean, if I believe I could beat Canelo now, but I would have a better chance if I have more experience with these better fighters, and that's what I'm trying to do. And I feel like Plant would have had a little bit better chance, too, if he would have got in there with some tougher opponents. Since he fought Uzkoteki, his level of opposition has been really, really weak. He fought, was it Andy Lee or is it Mike Lee?
He fought Mike Lee. He fought Feigenbutz, and he fought Truax.
Yeah, and Truax. And to be honest, man, those some really weak competition. He had a chance. I mean, he had a chance to fight me too. I think we fought a month apart their last fight. You know what I mean? So, you know, I mean, I think, but that's the thing too. People they don't want to hurt their chance of cashing out a check like that. Especially, I think these fighters are a little bit older. Plant, I don't think he's that old. Is he 29, something like that?
Yeah, he's not 30 yet.
I feel like in their head they're kind of close to the end of their career too, because they're already thinking about, you know, Plant, and I'm sure he's never going to make $12 million like that again. So no. I mean, if you think about that, it's probably thinking like, oh, I took a loss, you know, $12 million, and I'll probably just call this the end. I'm not saying he's going to retire, but I mean, it wouldn't be a bad end, you know, $12 million.
Oh, it's,
you know,
great. So, no, it's right. I've been saying it for months, man. It's like you guys put in so much work. So, I mean, this is the toughest sport in the world. So I'm not going to fault the guy for, you know, reaching the pinnacle and, you know, making $10 million, whatever he does next, whatever. I mean, he has nothing to answer to anyone besides his family, his team, and all that. But I do think if you want to be remembered, and try to beat Canelo. Everyone wants to beat him. He's the Mayweather of this era. We're all trying to figure out what's the best style to beat him. Who can do it? I think, honestly, the best fight, the best style, the best chance to beat him is with you. So May, Cinco de Mayo, two Mexicans stepping in the ring. I don't see a better option out there.
Yeah, man, and that's why I'm very excited. Even after this fight, you know, I've been gone from home for about 2.5 months. I'm going to just take a week off, and then I'm going to go back straight back into the gym. You know, I feel like this is the time, even when I don't have any fights lined up, after this fight, I have to work the hardest because that I've ever worked in my life, because these big fights are in the horizon. Yeah. It don't matter against who, but I feel like there's a lot of good opposition out there, so I really gotta focus myself more than I already am and just try to go to the next level.
You got your son in the gym yet? I know you started young. Is your son throwing hands?
Not yet, but every time I FaceTime my girlfriend, he's watching my fights.
That's amazing, man.
My girlfriend says, yeah, he gets mad that every time they take me off the fight, that he just wants to watch boxing all day. So I think he already has his blood, and he's already looking towards boxing.
He's got no choice. I mean, you started when you were super young. You got your brother fighting on this card. Benavidez family, they have no, they're fighters in every sense of the word. That's awesome, man. Looking forward to your fight this weekend. Looking forward to see what's next for you. You get into the prime of your career, and I think fans will be happy to hear the words that you just put out there about, you know, earning the shot and fighting all comers with a really good, fun style. David Benavidez, thanks for the time.
Thank you, brother.